In the book of Mark, chapter 10, there's four verses there that cover some things that Jesus said, and I want to use those as the basis for the topic tonight. In Mark chapter 10, starting in verse 42, it says, "But Jesus called them to him and saith unto them, Ye know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. But so shall it not be among you. But whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister, and whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many." Here Jesus is talking to his apostles, and he's talking about the government that rules over the Gentiles, and he's saying that the rulers are set in place to exercise lordship over the Gentiles, the rulers that are above the Gentiles. The Gentiles are in effect servants or just lowly citizens. But he tells his apostles, he said, it's not going to be that way with you. He says, whosoever of you will be greatest will be a servant, and the servant will be greatest. And I'm sure this was a new concept to them because, you know, the rulers, they consider the rulers great. The Caesars and the governors, they were above them. They had the rule over them. And so they probably questioned, how can I be the greatest and be a minister? We live in a world today, it seems like increasingly so, where we're kind of self-centered. Our lives are centered around everything we want to do, and we don't really think about serving others. And even in the religious world, we may drive by a church sometime, and it may, on the sign, it'll say church whatever, service times, and it'll say Minister Joe Smith. Apparently, they put somebody important on that sign, the chiefest person in that church, the minister. We put his name on the sign so we can attract people to this congregation. But there's a lady there in that congregation that's always serving other people. She's always visiting the sick and going to take food to people. Her name's not on the sign. Why is the minister's name on there? And even the word minister itself has been corrupted. There was a few years ago, there's a church here in Lubbock. A few years ago, their minister, their pastor, whatever you would call him, somebody told me one time he had a Visa gold card and drove a brand new Cadillac, and he wore the nicest suits. And when you thought of this car or this church, you thought of this person's name. They were synonymous with each other. And so minister, in the religious world, minister means the person that rules over the congregation, the person that directs the congregation. We go to someone and say, who's your minister? Tonight I want to talk about being a minister and being a servant and what it really means in God's eyes. For the purposes of this lesson, I started thinking about what it means to serve, and it occurred to me that serve is a very broad term. It could mean that we serve or assist somebody with their physical needs, or it could be their spiritual needs, or it could be that we help them emotionally. Generally, the term serve means to give of ourselves in some way to help someone in need somehow. Physically, we could tend to someone's physical need. It says in Romans chapter 12, it's in verse 13, it says, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. Now, I believe this means serving others in a physical sense with financial assistance or food, or putting people up, giving them a place to stay. We can serve people spiritually. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, it says, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Previously, in the chapter before, in the few verses before this, it had been talking about people's spiritual weaknesses and their lack of belief. And so starting out this next chapter, he says, bear ye one another's burdens. That's how we can serve these people spiritually. And in Romans chapter 15, starting in verse 1, it says, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good edification. For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproached thee fell on me. There's two important things in these three verses. The first is that we are to bear the infirmities of the weak. Other people's weaknesses, we're supposed to take them on ourselves. And second, in verse 3, it talks about how Christ did not come to this world to please himself or to do his own thing. He came to serve us, that is, give the ultimate sacrifice. And we can serve people emotionally. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 15, it says, rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. When people are excited, I've got a new job, we should say, that's exciting, tell me all about it. When somebody's sad, my mother died, we should give them a shoulder to cry on. We should support their emotions. That's the way we can serve someone emotionally. So why would we serve someone? Why is it a commandment? Do we just do it because it feels right? Do we get to put in a little notch on the back of our Bible so we can show how much good we've done? The first reason we would serve other people is because it's a command. It's commanded of us in the Scriptures. And I came up with three or four reasons why we would serve other people, and I'm going to use these Scriptures as examples of each one of these reasons, but notice within these Scriptures there are specific instances of someone serving another person. In Matthew chapter 23 and verse 11, Jesus again says something similar. He says, but he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. The people that are greatest among you, they will be the ones serving you. The people that are serving you and seeing to your needs, I will count them greatest. In James chapter 1 and verse 27, the writer here equates serving others as pure religion. Undefiled religion. He says, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. So here it equates service to others as being pure religion and being undefiled. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17, Paul tells Timothy, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. Here Paul's writing to Timothy, and he gives a command to Timothy to command others to do this. Continuing in verse 18, that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. So here's three examples that I found of scriptures that command us in various ways to serve others. And I might point out in this last example, where Paul says, charge them that are rich in this world, I believe he's talking about, I think probably back then in that society, the gap between the rich and poor was far greater than it is now. I mean, back then you even had masters and servants and slaves. I know today, in today's society, people say, well, the gap between the rich and poor is greater than it's ever been before. And I don't believe that's true, not in this society. In this society, we're all very wealthy. Ask the people that have traveled to India and see true homeless people, true beggars, people that have no place to go, no source of income. So Paul, he's writing to Timothy, talking about the people that are truly wealthy, and I believe this verse could apply to any of us here. I don't think we can look around the congregation and say, well, this verse must be talking about him and him and her because they're pretty wealthy, but not necessarily to me. I believe it's talking about all of us. We can't go around saying, well, this is someone else's job because I certainly can't afford to do something like that. We can afford to do a lot of stuff, even those of us who might be poor financially or have less money or less income are certainly capable of doing a lot. The second reason that we should serve others and to see to their needs is just out of love. In 1 John chapter 4, starting in verse 7, John, he equates God in love, and he talks about what God's followers will be, the traits or the qualities that they'll show. In 1 John chapter 4, starting in verse 7, he said, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. In this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. And then in verse 11, beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. In verse 9, it's been talking about God's love, and he says, in this was manifested the love of God. That means that God showed his love. That's what manifest means, to make obvious or plain or to show. God showed his love towards us by sending his only Son into the world. In verse 7, it says, everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. If we know God, we're to have love for our fellow man. And then in verse 11, it says, "Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another." Jesus gave the ultimate sacrifice by giving his life on the cross. And God gave, I guess you would call his ultimate sacrifice, by giving his only son. That's how much God loved us. And so John here is saying, if God showed this amount of love for us, we should love others in the same way. And we're followers of God, so we should show that same quality. If I'm a follower of somebody, I want to be like them. You see, if I'm a follower of a certain person, I may dress like that person. I may drive the same car as that person. You see, kids, they want to be like a celebrity. They're a follower of that celebrity. So they start talking, use the same expressions as that celebrity. If somebody's a follower of someone else, you can see similarities of how the follower tries to imitate the person they're following. If we have love for one another, that's how we imitate God. Backing up a chapter, in chapter 3, starting in verse 17, it says, "But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." Now we can talk about love. We can say how loving we are. We can put the little chrome fish on the back of our car to show that we're Christians. And we can talk a good talk. But if we don't show that compassion, show that love in deed, then we're just hypocrites. He says, "Let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and truth." Let's not just talk about it, let's actually do it. In Matthew chapter 22, someone comes to Jesus and tries to trip him up. In Matthew chapter 22 and verse 36, it says, "Master, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is likened to it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Jesus said everything written in the law, everything the prophets said, is based on these two ideas, that we should love God and that we should love our neighbor as ourselves. So Jesus here commanded that we should love others. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, it says, "Therefore all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets." He expresses the same idea here. A lot of times people, they say we should help someone because that might be us. There's some homeless guy, well, I'm going to give him some money. That might be there, me there someday, and I wouldn't want to be in that situation and no one helped me. We don't help somebody so that we'll get that same help in return. We help people because we love them, because it's the right thing to do, because God commanded us to. We can't say, well, I'm going to do that just because that might be me someday. That shouldn't be our motivation. That's very selfish if that's the reason we help others. What Jesus is saying here is we know how to treat others based on what we would like. I believe I'll never be homeless like this guy here is. But I think if I was like him, I would certainly want somebody to help me that way. I'll probably never have the serious illness and drag along for years and years towards death like this person will. But if I was in that situation, I know I would like somebody to come visit me. Jesus isn't saying help others so they'll help you later. Jesus is saying treat other people the way you would want to be treated if you were in their situation. When we help other people, when we serve others, it's a sign of our faith. And when we don't serve others, it could be a sign of a lack of faith. We'll read some verses in James chapter 2. And I was looking in my Bible at home, and it had an introduction to this book. And one of the things it said is, it said James seemed to concentrate more on the practical aspects of daily life, on the works aspect rather than faith. It said he didn't discount the importance of faith, but he seemed to concentrate more on the works. And we'll see that if when we read these verses in chapter 2, starting to verse 14. It says, "What doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, Depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. What James is saying here, not that faith, or not that works justifies us, or that works give us faith, or that works increase our faith. He's saying that faith, our faith will lead to works. How can we have faith when we don't have any, when we haven't done anything? He says, later he says, show me your faith without your works, and I'll show you my faith by my works. You can't see my faith. You can look at me and stare at me all day long, and you can't see faith. Faith is not anything tangible. But if you see me running around helping people and doing good things for others, bringing people meals, calling them when they're sick, things like that, you might look at me and say, Jeff has faith. Works don't give me faith. They don't justify me in the sight of God. They're a sign of my faith. We can say we have faith, and if we don't have works, maybe we better question ourselves. Maybe we better say, how strong is my faith? Does my faith lead me to do practical things? Does my faith lead me to serve God in a practical manner? And he says here that faith without works is dead. If we don't have works, then our faith is useless. It's just a word. Another reason that we serve others and help others is we do it for Christ. In Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 37, this is talking about the day of judgment, and Jesus said, he talks about all these situations, and he tells these people that I was in this situation and you came and helped me. And they said, we didn't see you in that situation. We didn't see you imprisoned or any of that. And we'll start picking up verse 37 where he explains. It says, then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? When saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Now these people that he's talking about in the future, apparently they had never seen Jesus. They'd never encountered Jesus, and certainly they never had any opportunity to help him. So when Jesus told these people that you've done this for me, and you've done this for me, and done this for me, they were confused. They were saying, I don't remember doing any of this. And Jesus said, when you did it to these people in need, you did it to me. So Jesus says that when we help the poor, we help Jesus. Or not just the poor. When we help people in need, it's as if we had done it to Jesus. Sometimes we might feel guilty about not serving others, and we'll kind of, I guess you say, well, I can't think of the word, but we'll start doing it. We'll get real good at it for a while. We'll visit people in the hospital. We'll get real motivated, and then we'll kind of slack off and taper off and not do it for a while. And then we're like, oh, you know, I need to get back in the habit of calling people and doing things like that. We should serve people, and we should do it all the time. In Galatians chapter 6, in verse 10, it says, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. He says, as we have opportunity. That means whenever we can, whenever there's a need, that we should do good to all men. Now, there's two ways we can see opportunity. We can sit at home and wait for the phone to ring, or wait for something to happen, or wait to get real motivated because it's somebody really close to us and we're really close to them, and so we want to go see them. Or we can actively seek out opportunities to help other people. I know recently in this congregation I've seen people serving others, and I thought, never occurred to me to do that. Look, they've been doing this every Sunday for the past 3 months, and I never even thought about doing it. These people, I don't know if they're better at seeing opportunity. I think they were looking for opportunity to serve others. If we want to serve all the time, we need to have our eyes open for ways to serve others. We need to look for people in need. We need to have some intuition and some love and some care for our fellow Christians and for our fellow man. When we care and love about other people, those opportunities will be easier to see those opportunities. There's a song in the other songbook. The name of the song is Room in God's Kingdom, And one of the lines that says, do not wait to be told or be sorrow driven to the work God has planned for you. This means don't just sit around. Don't wait for somebody to ask you, or don't just wait to get so emotional that you can't help but get up and do these things. We need to do the work God has planned for us right now. When we serve others, we can't think about the cost in money or the time or inconvenience or emotions that it's going to cost us. In John chapter 12, there's a very good example of this. There's two individuals I want to look at in this reading. John chapter 12 and verse 3 says, then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. So Mary took this ointment. It was very expensive, and apparently in a very expensive container, and she put it on Jesus' feet. And once she did that, you know, she can't, you know, scoop it up and put it back in the bottle. It's gone. It's wasted. But Mary, I assume this ointment of spikenard, it belonged to her. I assume it belonged to her, considering what she did with it. She didn't consider the cost. She didn't think, she just gave it. She just put it on Jesus' feet. The cost was no matter to her. In verse 4 it says, then said one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. Sometimes I think maybe we have a little bit more in common with Judas than we do in Mary, because we count the cost of serving others. Maybe not consciously. We don't pull out our calculator and consider the mileage to the hospital and the price of gas or how much vacation time we're going to waste just to go do this thing for somebody. But subconsciously, we think, really can't do that now. I don't have time. My tank's empty. I don't get paid till Thursday. So we have a lot in common with Judas because we consider the cost of what it would take to do something. And of course, in verse 6, it said Judas wanted that money. He wanted it to be sold so he could take the money. That's the way we are. We want that money. We think it's better spent somewhere else. And in Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 33, is another situation. Jesus is talking. He says, but a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, the person that had been beaten. And when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee. So here's the Samaritan. He comes up, he's on a trip going somewhere, and he sees this guy that's fallen into the hands of thieves. And what's his motivation? At the end of verse 33, he says he had compassion on him. Apparently, he didn't know this person. He didn't have anything to gain by helping him. His motivation was his compassion. And as the story goes on, he's used up some of his oil, some of his wine. He spent 2 pence, and he intends to spend some more. And I don't know how long it took him to give this guy care and to load him on his donkey or whatever. And I don't know if he took him to the inn, the direction he was already going, or if he had to take him back to a closer town the other direction. But this Samaritan in the story that Jesus is telling, he didn't consider any of that. He saw the guy, he had compassion on him, he loved him, and he did what needed to be done without counting the cost. One thing you've probably noticed when you've helped other people is that there's very seldom a time where you regret the cost or where you miss the time or the money or whatever you've wasted or that you've spent. Beforehand, we may think, I've really got to get this report out. I don't have time to leave work and go to the hospital. And we kind of, you know, juggle it around our mind, decide what we need to do. And we finally think, well, I just need to do this. So we go up to the hospital, we maybe spend an hour, we may spend 2 hours, a lot longer than we ever intended. And we go back to work and we continue working. And we don't think, I wish I hadn't gone to the hospital. Now I'm more behind than ever. We go back to work and we start working with the knowledge that we did the right thing. In the same way with money, if we give money to an individual, assuming they're not a con artist, if we give money to a person who actually needs it, if we put money in the tray on Sunday morning we never think about that money again. If we think about that money, we think about it during the financial report when Milton's talking about the people that have been helped, the houses that have been built after the tsunami, the number of motorcycles that have been bought in India, the medical care that somebody's received because of that money. Don't ever count the cost of what it's going to take you to serve others. That'll just be a discouragement. Instead, you can spend that time or that money or those emotions or whatever it is, and you can look back on it and consider it time well spent or money well spent. In Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 27, it says, "He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse." It's talking about a person that gives money to the poor, and we can expand the content or the idea here to do any type of service to other people, to help anybody in any way. And that was Proverbs chapter 28, verse 27. And so it's reinforcing what we see in the story of the Samaritan. That money was spent and that time was spent. It says that person will never lack. They won't go back and think, "I need that money back." Sometimes we hear the phrase givers and takers. We think of it in a social sense or an economic sense. You say, well, there's givers and there's takers. There's people over here, there's the producers, and then there's the spenders. Sometimes in the church, there's givers and takers. We see people that are always doing for other people. They have plans, and they break their plans so they can go take lunch to somebody. They're going to go home and take a nap, but it turns out somebody went in the hospital, so they go up to the hospital to see that person. Every time you turn around, they don't have their own plans. They're doing something for somebody else. But then you see the people. The only time you hear anything from them is when they need something, when they've got a problem. Those people are used to being takers. They expect to be helped. They expect to be served. But it never occurs to them to do that to other people. We might think, well, I was in the hospital and nobody came to visit me. Why is that? Well, maybe because everyone's like you. It's a good thing people came to visit you in the hospital. So we need to be careful that we're serving others. Occasionally, we'll fall into hard times. Something will happen. We'll be sick. We'll have relatives that are sick. We may fall on financial problems. And other people will have an opportunity to serve us, and that's good. We should accept that help, and we should be gracious about it, and we shouldn't be insulted about it. And it gives those other people, the givers, an opportunity to serve and do the will of God. But then when it comes time, when we get back on our feet, when our health returns or our lives get back in order, we can go back to being the givers. We can give to people that need the help. And sometimes we look around. Some of us have discussed this recently. We see people that should frequently be on the receiving end of this charity, of this help, but they're not. They're always giving to others. And a lot of times these people that are helping others are worse off than the people they're helping. They just have that giving spirit. They have that love in their hearts for their fellow man, for their fellow Christians. They go visit people that are actually in better health than they are. They give money to people that have more money than they do. We can use those people as an example. Givers and takers isn't based on the actual need of the person or the actual ability of the person to help. It's based on the mindset, what they want to do and where they want to be. When there's opportunity to help other people, or I guess just about any time in life, some of us are good at coming up with excuses. I'm real good at excuses. Of course, with me, they're not excuses, they're reasons. When you say the same thing, it's an excuse. And when it comes time to serve others, there's all sorts of excuses. The best one is, "I'm too busy." And a lot of times that's not really an excuse, it's a reason. We are very busy. A lot of us are very busy. I don't know many people that just sit around and watch TV waiting for some opportunity to come along. But when we look at our lives, we're busy doing the things we want to do. You might say, "No, I have to go to work. I have to do my taxes. I have to take so-and-so to school. I have to study for a final." But when we have to do all these things, generally all these things we have to do, they're choices that we've made, or they're the result of other choices that we've made. So be honest with yourself when I say, "I have to do so-and-so first," and think, Will the world end if I don't do it? Will I get thrown in jail if I don't do it? Can I put it off and do this other thing? Generally, we can say yes. I wouldn't skip jury duty to go visit someone in the hospital. But 9 times out of 10, these things that we have to do, we could have done yesterday, we can do tomorrow. We can put those aside to serve others. We can ask ourselves the question, why do these other people find time to serve, but we can't? Well, it's because I'm busier than they are. I have more stuff going on in my life. I have kids. I have 2 jobs. I have this and this. Actually, the answer is I can't find the time to serve because I haven't made it a priority in my life. We consciously and subconsciously prioritize things in our life, and the things at the top of our priorities we say we have to do. But other people make different priorities. I might say I have to go to work this morning, and this person over here may say, I can't go to work, I have to take food to sister so-and-so. If we can't find the time to serve others, we need to re-examine our priorities. We may come up with a lot of other excuses, and most of them are pretty selfish. I don't like funerals, they make me sad. I don't like nursing homes, they're gross. I don't know what to do. I'm not a good cook. My house isn't clean. I wouldn't know what to say. In Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 27, it says, withhold not good from them to whom it is due when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give when thou hast it by thee. We always have an opportunity to serve people, and we can't sit around and think up reasons that we're not going to do it. Some other excuses are, well, that's the elder's job. That's the deacon's job. You know, the elders have appointed this person here to do it. They had a list the other day on the board, and these people signed up to do that, so I don't need to. The song I referred to earlier, another line in it, says there's work that we all can do. So generally, if we want to do something, we'll do it. If we don't want to do something, we'll find any reason not to do it. I've noticed this with Leslie and me. If I want to go fishing on Saturday, she'll say, well, what about work? I'm going to take the day off. We don't have any money. I'll get it out of savings. You need new tires. I'll take your car. You see, when I want to do something, there's no reason, there's no thing that'll keep me from doing it. But if Leslie said, can you mow the yard today? There's no gas, and I don't have any cash to buy gas. I think it's going to rain. I was going to fertilize before I mowed. The grass is too wet. It's too dry. It's before 9 o'clock and I can't run the mower. You see how when I don't want to do something, any reason is good enough to keep me from doing it? Before I close, there's a few other, you might say, random thoughts that I had while I was preparing my lesson. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, it says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. When we help other people, frequently that work that we do is visible to others. When we visit someone in the hospital, those people's non-Christian relatives find out about it. We may run into them at the hospital. They'll see our good works. When we take food to someone, the neighbor may come over and say, well, where'd you get the casserole? A lady from church brought it. When we do those things for other people, when we serve others, God is glorified. We're not glorified. We're just a generic messenger. We're doing the work for God. When we do some good, people see us doing good. And who do they think about? They kind of think about us. They say, well, that Jeff's a good guy. But God is glorified. Another thought I had was that when we do good, people remember it, possibly longer than we do. Years ago, I think it was probably before Caleb was born, I think it's probably about 15 years ago, Leslie was sick, and I don't like to cook, and so when Leslie's sick, we're either going to go out to eat or starve. And I was at church by myself on Sunday morning, and someone here in the congregation said, let us bring you lunch. And I'm not sure what I said. My guess is I probably said, no, you don't need to do that. But knowing these people, I'm sure they insisted, and they said, what do you want? I don't care. And so I went on home, and I told Leslie, so-and-so's bringing us lunch. I was excited because I didn't have to cook. And I remember a few minutes later, the doorbell rang, and one of the couple came up to the door and handed me 2 sacks. And, you know, we thanked them and everything, and I went in the kitchen, and I set the 2 sacks on the counter. and it was barbecue. And I love barbecue. It's one of my favorite foods. And I started, and they weren't very big sacks, and I started pulling stuff out of them. I pulled potato salad out. I love potato salad. It was like, I don't know, a pint or 2 pints of potato salad. I pulled beans out. I pulled barbecue sauce out. I went to the other sack. I pulled brisket out. I pulled sausage out. And we feasted on that. That was the best barbecue I'd had in a long time. Number one, because Leslie had been sick for a long time. Number two, because I didn't have to cook it. Number three, it was just got good barbecue. And the leftovers we put in the refrigerator, and we warmed it up later, and I enjoyed it just as much the second time. My point to that story is, that was almost 20 years ago. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I appreciate it as much now as I did then. And that couple, I don't know if they remember it or not. I may ask them sometime. Do you remember when you did so-and-so? So the point is, when we do good for somebody, it may not seem like a big deal. But if you're in the hospital alone, regardless of the seriousness of your illness, a visit does that person a lot of good. No matter what you do for someone, even if it's just a little thing, you bring them a magazine when they're sick, they'll remember those things. Another thing I thought of is when you serve other people, involve others. Ask people to come with you. A while back, some people in this congregation went to visit some other members, and they asked some kids to go with them. Now, they could have gone themselves. It was a young couple. But they called several of the kids and said, hey, we're going to go do this. We're going to go visit these people. Can the kids come with us? And that was a really good thing. It showed them an example, and of course, it really lifted up the spirits of the people they visited. A while back, there was an opportunity in the church to help someone in need. And I emailed somebody. I said, well, let me know if I can help. And he emailed right back. Okay, meet me so-and-so, and we'll go do so-and-so. I'm like, I'm busy. I really got to get this stuff done. And so I thought, well, I'll offer it. I need to go help. And so I spent the rest of the afternoon helping this person. And when we were done, I remarked to the person that had called me. I said, you know, I felt like I should offer, but I really didn't want to help today. I was so busy. And you know what he did? He just laughed and said, I know. But he had an opportunity to serve other people, and he involved me in that opportunity. And the job that needed doing got done with the help of some others. And it did me good because, you know, I came to the realization, number one, that I shouldn't have had the attitude that I did. Number two, that I wasn't out anything when it was done, and also that it was just greatly appreciated. Whenever we have the opportunity to serve others, call someone else and say, do you want to come with me to do this? I'm going to send money to so-and-so. Do you want to contribute? It really helps others. It builds them up. It gets a job done. And if a person's not used to doing that type of work or service or whatever, it kind of gets them in the groove. It kind of gets them used to those situations. As I said earlier, a lot of times we get the idea that we're here on this earth to have a career and raise our kids and make enough money to last us until we die. And if we get a name on a building or have lots of grandkids or something like that, that's good too, but you know, we just gotta make it through and just serve ourselves. But we're not here to serve ourselves. We know that Jesus, his sole purpose in coming to earth was to die for our sins. He was the Son of God. He had all power in heaven in his hands. He could have done anything. He could have ruled the world if he wanted to. But he knew it wasn't about him. His mission was to serve his fellow man by dying for our sins. And our mission in life is to serve God. It's not about us. It's not about our careers. It's to serve God and to serve other people. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24, it says, let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. And then in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4, it says, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. We need to remember that it's not all about us, that we're not here to serve ourselves. And so when opportunities arise, we need to remember that those things are the priorities, not the things that we already had planned. Hopefully some of the things I've said tonight will be useful to us, or at the very least good reminders. I don't think there's anything here that we didn't know, really. But when I was preparing the lesson, it was a good reminder to me. This is a place that I fall short. and I'd been thinking about this. So hopefully you'll remember these things, and when opportunities arise, you can help the people in need and also let your light shine when other people see it, and God will be glorified. If there's anyone here who has any need of the church tonight, you can come forward while we sing this invitation song.